Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we have a wonderful guest, a man, well, he's a bit different from most of us. Why? He is the first African American to have dual citizenship in the USA and USSR. He has been named one of the top 10 most influential foreign-born Russian citizens ever. He's been a EuroLeague champion twice. And Russia's first ever European champion. That was in 2007. And the list goes on and on and on. Who is my guest? Well, it's J.R. Holden. And his book is titled Blessed Footsteps. J.R., welcome to the airwaves.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on and just want to reach out and say thank you. It's a true blessing.
Well, J.R., you are quite a fascinating young man, and your book, Blessed Footsteps, really is a fascinating one. I think it's one of the best publications I have read regarding what a young male, I don't care what their ethnicity is, what they go through, and why sports is so valuable, and how incredibly significant it is. The way coaches train, the interaction, the trust, the responsibilities you learn about, but your journey that ended up taking you into Russia was just absolutely fascinating. I am not a big sports fan. I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not one of these people that's glued to the TV set when the NFL comes on or anything else comes on. It's like, no thanks, that's just not my cup of tea. But I was fascinated with the extent of the basketball environment here, not just in the United States, but overseas. This was just absolutely eye-opening for me. J.R., you were born an athlete. I mean, you're one of those individuals. You played football. You did. Tell us about your younger years. I mean, you're one of these guys that Mother Nature just said, okay, kid, you got it, and you used it. Why? Go for it.
I don't know if I was born an athlete, but I will say that my mom really just wanted me to be active as a kid. She just didn't want me sitting around the house. So being in all types of sports as a young man, just well, as a young child, was just normal. Like, all my brothers did it. My sister was in every sport. So it was almost like a family tradition that we all had to grow up and be active and not just with sports, but it was even in school. Like, we had to be a part of the honor society or had to be part of student council. It was always something. So I would really have to give a credit to my mom is really forcing us to get out there and really just reach out and see what we were good at.
Now, you, and again, this is my 50 cents worth. Anybody that can play football, baseball, do all of these things, I mean, really, you had an athletic... You had an ability with this. I mean, if somebody tried to put me in that positioning, they'd flunk me out in the first 30 seconds, you know, in the female division. It just wouldn't have worked. My body structure didn't work that way. But you had this wonderful capacity, and you fell in love with basketball. Tell my listeners why you gave up on the football and the other aspects of sports to focus on the one game of basketball.
Well, I can say I grew up loving football, but I had a best friend who was going through some things at home, and he didn't like any sport except basketball. He just loved basketball. So with him being my best friend, he ended up moving into our house, and my mom kind of adopted him when he was about 11 or 12. So at about 11 or 12, all I started doing outside of my other sports was playing basketball with him. It was my best friend. You know, what do best friends do together? Do the things that, you know, the one enjoy. So I started picking it up, and it's really amazing how a group of men who are older can take to younger men. Whether it was, you know, I've had men that were, you know, weren't the best influences, whether it was a drug dealer or whether it was just someone that wasn't hit it the right way that told me, hey, stick to sports, do this. And I was surrounded by a lot of men that did a lot of things to help me, whether whether it was a teacher in school or whether it was, someone working as a security guard. I think everyone influenced me to stick to sports, and basketball was just something I adopted through a friend. So I can honestly say my best friend made me fall in love with the game of basketball.
Part of your story that I think is very, very significant is that your mom and dad ended up divorcing. However, both of your parents were very, very active. And like you said, your mom really was a stickler for demanding performance and really encouraged discipline. Your dad was absolutely supportive of you with sports. And I think it's a good example about how parents don't need to go to war if they don't belong together, and that happens with people where they just shouldn't be married, but they have children, they still can support the kids and not have this evil stuff going on between them, that's my term, that just makes it absolutely miserable. And you were, I think, very fortunate because both of your parents worked together in that objective, that it was you kids really were to do what you needed to do, and they both wanted the best for you.
I can honestly say that my mom, very similar to you, wasn't into every sport, and she kind of put that on my dad. So although they didn't live together, I almost see my dad every day because I had a practice here or something. So, you know, I really do think it's very important to have both your parents involved in some aspect of your life. And when I came home from school, my mom was a stickler for, you're going to get these grades together, you're going to make sure, because if you don't get good grades, you can't play these sports. And my dad was the one that was saying, listen, if you're going to play this sport and you want me to be there for you, I want you to give it your all. If it's going to camps or if it's going to bed early, to wake up early, to work out or to be the best you can be, then that's what that's what I want you to do, put your best foot forward.
I think that is fabulous. I think that expectation sets a standard for young people. And your neighborhood was not pristine. You just mentioned the drug dealers and all kinds of negative environments that you could have chosen to have an association with, but because of this support and because you actually loved the sports, you really did, then you learned how to be street smart. And you said this neighborhood had the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you had your choices. But I'll tell you what, I think that Pittsburgh is a fascinating city, and you said in the 70s, when you were growing up, you had to really almost be involved in sports. Everybody was involved in sports one way or the other. Why do you think Pittsburgh is so oriented towards that fever of enjoyment?
Well, I would say we're not a big basketball city, but we're definitely a football, and in the 70s, we're definitely a baseball as well. But I think it's because, we're the steel city. We're known as blue-collar, hard workers, and I think our city embraces that. We embrace the person that, is kind of the underdog, the person that everyone doesn't kind of vote or cheer for as a, their whole life. So I think our city just kind of embraces that personality, and I think I've just taken that on as one person, as one person is a part of the city.
Now, there's a part of your nature that, when reading your material, that really stood out. You were not afraid of competition. That was something, you had this very competitive side of you, and it was with your older brother especially. And I think anybody that has the younger sibling position, you say, oh, boy, can I relate to that? You betcha.
Yeah.
What was it with your older brother? What was he involved with, and why was there this feeling of competition? Why was it important for you to be just as good as your brother?
Well, I think because he's the one that kind of set the standard. Everyone always looked at me as, oh, that's, my brother Warren. That's his younger brother. So I always was in his spotlight. So I felt like at the very least, I had to be as good as him. So I almost felt like it was a challenge to be a little bit better. And as the younger brother, as a kid, you're always like, if I can beat my older brother, I can beat anybody. And I think every sibling feels that way. So by the time I was able to beat my older brother, I felt like I was ready to take on the world. I know I wasn't, but at that time, it's like, man, if I can get as good as my older brother, I feel like that was my goal. And I think in life, I think if everybody sets their goals like one step at a time and not look so far down the road, they can achieve anything. I think if you just take it one step at a time, one day at a time, I think anything is possible. And I'm a living proof of that.
Boy, that's for sure. You had a coach, Coach Fleming, and he recognized your talents. He wanted you on the varsity team. But he was a man that never wanted you to forget the environment you came from and that you were going to have to work hard to become a good team player. And if someone, a young person, were listening to this show today, what would you say that was one of the biggest lessons that you learned from Coach Fleming and that you would pass on to a young person?
I guess depending on the young person, the first thing would be it's okay to be quote-unquote afraid or scared. I think we're all, to a degree, fearful of what's next and what's in front of us. But what he taught me is that reality, if I wake up each day and I look in the mirror and I say, I want to just be a better person today, not just a better basketball player, but a better son, a better, you know, a better student, a better, you know, a better brother. If you do that every day, you're blessed with the opportunity to fight another day. And that's all I think we all want to achieve. And I think that's what he brought to me most, is that each day we wake up, we fight. And that's one of the things he's taught as a young kid, is he called it Warrior's Code. If you can wake up the next day and look in the mirror and say, I'm going to be better today, you're one step ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, your mom did something that I thought was very interesting. She wanted you to go to a particular school that was primarily white. You are an African-American, and this was not something you had ever been exposed to. And you had a tough time at that school in the beginning, didn't you?
Yes, definitely.
Why was it tough?
First off, it's a culture shock. And it wasn't a place that I wanted to be. It was a place that I felt like I was forced to be. And anytime you're taken out of your surroundings or where you're comfortable, I think you always have that a little bit, that internal thing where you want to stay away from everyone else, and that everyone else is out to get you and not help you. And that's just so far from the truth. But I think anytime you're that young, at 13 years old, and you're going an hour and a half, 2 hours from home to go to school, and you live away from home for the first time in your life, I think it was a, you know, it was a frightening time for me.
And I think that the points that you bring out of how eventually that fear left, but it was really quite a learning curve for you to go through that. And one of the people, his name was Raj, that was there at the school, he demanded accountability. That was so important to him. And I think that is something that a lot of the people in the adult environment and those that should be giving examples to younger people are not honest about. They're not accountable for their own behavior. And then a lot of our young people today say, who cares? Nobody's going to care. Why is accountability so important? And what was the biggest lesson you learned about with that?
Well, first off, I think accountability is very important, because one person you are definitely responsible for is yourself. And your influence, that small influence you have on yourself, it's a trickle-down effect. And one thing he taught us was something as simple as, we all used to ride the bus. And he would say, if there's ever an older man or woman that gets on the bus, if you're sitting down, no matter where you're sitting, you're supposed to give up and give that person your seat. Well, the reality of it is most people will see that as, who cares? Nobody really cares. But the truth is a lot of people do care, and that trickles down to other kids, I mean, you know, your peers, and to the adult. They actually see you in a different light. And sometimes when you lend out a helping hand is lent out to you. And one thing he told me is that you're not going to make it by yourself. So if you think that you can do whatever you want and you can be successful, it'll never happen. So accountability is very important, because you can't make it out here on your own by yourself. You will need help from someone. And if you're helping someone, believe me, someone will help you.
I think that that is so important. And I think that this is something that people like you in the sport environment, that this is so important to be able to share with people. And that is what makes your book, Blessed Footsteps, so exceptional, as far as I'm concerned, because you are very honest about what you went through, the people that supported you, the negative experiences you went through. All of this is so well stated in your book, and you even have comments by other people that were very close to you and evolved through your growth into a championship player. You really wanted to be in the NCAA, and you wanted to be one of the best players. You really had this desire to be one of the best. This was very important to you.
Definitely.
But you really went through some changes because as hard as you worked, as hard as you played, you didn't mm-hmm. make it there, but another door opened for you. Tell us what happened when you were in college, and how in the world did you get into Russian basketball?
Well, to make this long story short, in college, I came out during the lockout, the same thing they're going through now, but it was going on in 1998. And having come out from a small school, I didn't get a lot of opportunities and not a lot of looks from NBA teams, organizations, owners, etc. So I actually went into a good friend of mine's office who was a college coach of the Division I program. He had this form on his desk, and it said, if you want to play basketball in Europe. Now, of course, I thought, you know, they hand out millions of these. Okay, I'll just fill it out and see what happens. And at the time, my mom had said that once you graduate school, you have to get a job on your birthday. So you have to start looking for a job by your birthday. I know you had this dream, but you're a grown man now. You're not going to live here for free. So I filled out this sheet, and no lie, August 9th, I get a call from a guy in Finland named Mr. Rauno. He says, if you have your passport, you can come try out in a team in Riga, Latvia, a country I had never, in a city I had never heard of, for a week, and we'll give you $500. Now, you have to understand, a young man from the city, $500 for a week to just go try out for a team, I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. Okay, I'll be here. I didn't mm-hmm. know if I would get a full contract. I didn't know how long the deal was. All I knew was I was getting a chance to fulfill my dreams of being a professional basketball player, no matter where it was. And that's really how it started. I went over there. I played well for the first week. They signed me for a contract for the first year for $25,000. Now, most people will say $25,000 doesn't make you a professional. Maybe they're right, but that was just my first step to, you know, my journey to Russia and beyond.
Well, it's incredible because you tell of your experiences being an American, going overseas, staying in quarters that were very different, the whole environment. You were literally in a different world. When someone would have an opportunity like that offered to them, I know you took it, and what would you say to someone that would open up to an opportunity like that to be in another country? What would be a piece of advice that you would give them?
I guess the first thing I would say is just to go over with an open mind and an open heart. The same way you approach people here, they're the same there. It's just the language is different. I think that's mm-hmm. your biggest shock, that when you're overseas and then you're in an isolated country, let's just say like a Latvia, no one really speaks English, and I think sometimes that can be a turnoff and a discouragement for you to keep pushing to fulfill whatever your dreams or goals may be. So I would say the first go over with an open mind and an open heart, and to really just try to embrace what they do and who they are as people over there first, and you'll find your way. I think it'll take a little time. I won't sit here and lie and say it happened overnight, but I do think if I would have went over with a little bit more of an open mind and open heart, the transition would have been easier, faster.
Now, you had all kinds of players. They were from around the world. And when I came to this portion in your book, I said, holy Moses, this is a world in a million years I perhaps would never be exposed to. But through your book, I was able to be aware of the inside action with basketball. And one of the things is that you had to really have an attitude to play to win, and you had to learn how to be a good team player. And you had some people that played with you when you were in these different countries that were recognized as top of their field, but not all of them could play on these overseas teams.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for a lot of people to do, I think especially when you're coming from an environment where you've kind of been spoiled to a degree, if you go to these big-time colleges, you're used to, you know, A1 treatment. And when you get overseas, it's almost like starting over. It's really, you know, truly a new beginning. And when you're out there, one thing I love about it, and I think was to my advantage, they don't care who you are or what you did before you got here. It starts from this day forward. And I think that's the whole point in every day waking up and saying I want it to be better. I never lost sight of who I was, but what I did yesterday didn't matter. It's what am I going to do and who am I going to be today? And I think that's what I loved about the European basketball is you can't really rest on your laurels or what you did last week, last game, or even last night. You really have to focus on each day because the next American will be looking to take your job and your position because everyone wants an opportunity to be a professional.
Absolutely. You made a statement that I thought was quite powerful, and I agreed with it 100%. You said, in sports, I've learned that champions know how to lose. That is what makes them champions. And I think that point is so significant because you're not going to be A+ 100% of the time. The game is just as much an emotional perspective and mental as it is physical, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's why I feel like I wrote the book so honest, because I felt like it's the same with business. You may be a new business owner and you may fail. You may lose your business and have to start all over. But just like you said, you have to learn how to lose in order to win. I feel like that in anything, and I think in anything in life, I think you have to learn how to say, I'm going to learn from this mistake, or I'm going to learn from what affected me today, why I responded that way. And because it's so emotional, it's easy to lose yourself sometimes in the heat of that moment. And we do it in business. We make emotional decisions instead of decisions based off of facts and what we do know.
Now, you didn't have an agent in the beginning.
And no,
when you got along to a certain point, someone said to you, you need an agent. Well, I've heard all kinds of horror stories about quote-unquote agents. And what would you say to someone that's wanting to find an agent? When would they actually start looking for one, and how do they gauge a good one?
First off, I think most agents, they do come after you. I think my story is unique because they came after me late after I was already a professional and playing overseas a couple years. I think the most difficult thing to find in an agent is that balance. Of course, you want an agent that's going to get you the best deal possible. But I also think you want an agent that doesn't put limitations on who you can become. I had a lot of agents meet me early on and said, well, you know what? The max amount of money you'll make is $500,000, or the max is this. Well, I also had agents that said, if you play as well as you need to play, I can get you as much money as you want, as you feel like you deserve. And that's the agent I went with. I went with the agent that didn't put limitations on who I could become, because you don't know how hard I'm going to work or how dedicated I am to being the best I can be. And I think that's one thing I try to get across to every athlete or every person that's trying, whether you're being a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, is to be the best you can be. I never looked at it and said, I want to be like Michael Jordan or I want to be like Kobe Bryant. I said, I want to be the best J.R. Holton I can be. And if that falls short of any of those people, I'm okay with it because I was the best me. Instead of chasing someone else, if you chase yourself, you'll always reach greatness.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good statement. You say in your book, as a compliment to that, you came to the point where you realized that the person pushing, the person working, the person who wanted to be the best point guard in Europe was you. The EuroLeague, which eventually apparently became what's called a Super League, 32 teams from different countries. It's almost like the Olympics. I mean, this is really something. And you had all kinds of talent there. This is really quite incredible.
Yeah, they say it's the second best league to the NBA, of course, and now you're seeing this a big crossover effect. A lot of NBA players are going to Europe, and a lot of Europeans are coming to the States. So I'm always saying be the best where you're at. I mean, of course, everybody wants to play in the NBA, and that's everyone's dream, but there's a lot of talent all around the world, and now the United States is going to Europe to find it. So it just lets you know how small this world really is.
Wow. When you were able to participate in the Olympics, Tell us how that evolved and how you represented Russia, not the United States, in the Olympics.
Well, it all started my second year in Russia. They were having problems with their national team. You know, the Soviet Union used to be a powerhouse, but since they broke off, you know, Lithuania and other countries, Russia hadn't been where they wanted to be. And actually, our owner of our club was very close with President Vladimir Putin, or former Russian President Vladimir Putin. And I come into the office, and jokingly, at a game, he says, "Hey, how would you like being a point guard of our team?" And of course, I'm laughing like, "Yeah, I would do it. I would love to do it." I can't lie. 6 months later, he calls me. I'm at, you know, on my way to practice, a regular practice for my team. He says, "Go to the Russian embassy. All you have to do is take a picture. You'll have a Russian passport, but you need to play 3 years for the Russian national team." I was speechless. I didn't know what to say. He didn't give me time to think about it. I didn't know he was really serious. It was just such a shock, and it happened so fast. Before I knew it, I was on my way to the Russian embassy. I took the picture, and Vladimir Putin calls me, and he says, "Well, you know what? I know you're a U.S. citizen, but I know Mr. Kushenko wouldn't make anyone a Russian who's not a good young man." And he said, "Represent our country well." And that was it. And it took off from there. Then, you know, we went on to play in the European Championships, and Russia had never won a European Championship. And, you know, my first year with the team, we didn't do as well as we wanted. But in 2007, it was a chance to go to the 2008 Olympics. All we had to do was end up in the top three. Well, we played really well, and I was truly blessed. And I was given an opportunity, losing by 1 point, to have the ball in my hands the last second of the game, and I made a shot, and Russia won its first ever championship ever.
Wow. The story is so dynamic. And in the process of being with the team, there was a lot of growing up that you went through. And I think that is what is significant about your book, Blessed Footsteps, because you don't hesitate to show the male side of thinking and the evolution of your own maturation and how you really had to get to that point. No excuses, no holds barred. I'm accountable. I've got to do this, this, thus, thus, and so. And it really makes for a fascinating read. J.R., you are a man that has just accomplished so much. You have a wonderful family, and you have a beautiful little girl. Right now, are you still playing basketball? Have you retired from the game? What are you doing?
Actually, I recently retired about 5 months ago. I'm actually spending a lot of time with my daughter. I do have a foundation. I'm running a little charity event every summer. I'm really just kind of getting entrenched back in the United States. I've spoken to three universities, to their college athletics, their men's and women's team. So I'm really just trying to get my story out and trying to help, I guess, everyone understand that, you know, they can live life beyond boundaries, that, you know, they don't have to be closed off because of where they're at or where they're from or who tells them what they can't do. I'm big on, you know what, everybody knows what you can't do. Tell me what you can do. Tell me what you're good at. And one of the things I try to get across to every college student, athlete or not, is what do you want to do and what are you going to do to get there? And I don't want I'm going to do what the next person done. Well, my thing is, if you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and maybe miss breakfast or miss lunch in order to be the best student so you can accomplish your goals, then do it. Like, nobody's stopping you. Don't tell me that you can't do it until you show me that you can. See, a lot of people say they've done everything they could. But everything is not truly everything. It's everything they thought they could. It's not truly what they could do. And I guess I just want to push people to that limit of, you know what, I've done everything I could do to be where I want to be.
Making the sacrifices, going through the growing up cycle, and doing the things that really make life a fascinating experience. J.R., your book, Blessed Footsteps, is wonderful. It is your memoir. And I know you've got more to accomplish. You have the J.R. Holden Foundation. And how can people find out more about you? Because I think you're such an inspiration to young kids. I really think that anyone listening that knows of some young people that are really into sports, male, female, it doesn't make any difference. This is a book that I think should be in your library because it tells the reality. of a young man's journey to eventually becoming involved in the Olympics, and the team was number 5 in the overall ratings at the Olympics. JR, what's your website?
It's www.jrobholden.com. That's JROBHOLDEN.com. That's my website.
Well, JR, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much. I wish you nothing but the best of success in the future and everything you do. And I hope that your foundation reaches thousands of young people in the way that you want it. Thank you again for being my guest today. For those of you listening, JR Holden, Blessed Footsteps. This is about a basketball champion. It's a good read. I recommend it. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Well, in keeping with the season, we have a delightful guest. She's a friend of mine. I've known her for years. Her name is Mary Ellen, and she is a woman that just has the most wonderful newsletter about angels and miracles, and we've known each other for years. She was one of my first guests 11 years ago when I started my show, and I'm delighted to have her on the airwaves with me today. Mary Ellen, welcome to the show.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Well, you are the angel lady, and you have just always had the most wonderful stories to share with people, and this is the holiday season. I thought it would be terrific if we could share one of your stories. You've put out a couple of books, A Christmas Filled with Miracles, and you had another one, Expect Miracles, and I know I was a contributor to one of your books, but today, what story would you like to share with my listeners that is especially poignant?
Well, you know what I'd like to do? I don't just write about miracles, Donna. They happen to me all the time, and I'm sure they happen to your listeners. You just need to pay attention and acknowledge them when they happen, and then they will manifest more and more and stronger. Well, this is, and you never know when they're going to happen. This miracle I'm about to tell you happened to our family like 30 years ago, and I tell it every year in the on the angelscribe.com website for one reason. It's like always watching your favorite Christmas movie or hearing your favorite Christmas song. People love this story, and so do I. This is what happened. I was living on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, and my mother was in North Vancouver up where they held the Olympics. And it was Christmas time, and my husband and I loaded up our two shaded silver Persians, who, by the way, didn't swim.
And not then.
Not those cats. My new ones will be on Animal Planet, as you know, coming up here next
right.
year.
Yes.
But so what happened is we loaded up the car with the presents. I said goodbye to my best friend, Rita, you know, and you know how friends are. You call each other three times a day with all the exciting news or the sad news or the oh my God news. And so her phone number is long since memorized. So I called her and said goodbye. And we loaded up the car, and it's an hour and a half ferry trip across to Vancouver Island, and the cats are in the back seat looking at all the dogs in the front seats of their cars. And then we pull into Vancouver, and we go up to North Vancouver where my mom is. And I knew it wasn't going to be the same Christmas as we'd always had in our family home. My mom had remarried. My sister had since died. And my mother's husband, who we all adored, had been stricken with terminal cancer. And we were sitting in the driveway, and I looked up at the lights that had been there for 20 years on the house, you know, and all the memories. And I'm like, oh, dreading to go inside. So we let the cats out, and they visited their old haunts. And then I went inside. You could see all of his medicine bottles lined up like soldiers against his illness. And we said hi, but, you know, it was obviously a downer mood. And we were only there for about an hour and a half before bedtime. So we went to bed early, and then when I woke up early, it was like 7-ish, just before 7, and I knew my friend Rita would be long since up because she had two little kids, and, you know, they're going to be up since 5.
Absolutely. So
I thought Christmas morning I needed to cheer myself up, so, you know, I dialed Rita's phone number just to hear a cheery voice, and when she picks it up, I hear, "Hello?" And I'm thinking, oh, Donna, now what else is wrong? And so I said, are you okay? And Rita supposedly says, who is this? I went, uh-oh. I'd obviously woken somebody up Christmas morning. I, like, totally apologized. And this very elderly voice said, that's okay. I don't have any reason to, you know, not be awake or get up. Her husband had died. She didn't have any relatives. She had nowhere to go. And, you know me, I talk easily. So we chatted for 40 minutes. And by then, my mother was up rummaging around. And I put the phone down. I went running up to her. And I said, Mom, is it okay if we invite Rita, whoever the stranger is, we learned her name was Faith, go figure, for Christmas dinner? And my mom said, sure, that'd be fine. So I go back to the phone. And I said to Faith, this is the funny part. I had called long distance to Rita's house. And so when I said to this lady, where do you live? She lived an hour away from North Vancouver in Burnaby, B.C. Her phone number wasn't even similar to Rita's. Somehow when it hit the phone exchange, things jumped and mixed, and I woke up a stranger. So anyway, so she ended up catching three buses and coming across this snowy bridge and up the hill towards the mountain. And all of a sudden, now she's in her late 80s, and she thinks, uh-oh, where am I going? Nobody knows I'm out. You know, it's cold, the roads are isolated, even the buses are on minimum staff. So she thought she better tell somebody where she was going, so she told the bus driver where she was going. He says, oh, you'll be okay in that neighborhood. And so I drove down this long hill to pick her up, and there getting off the bus was the cutest little old lady you ever saw. And she looked up at me, and I could see she was worried because she had no clue who she was meeting. She just had an adventuresome spirit still. And I took Faith home for Christmas dinner. And when I drove back to the house, there was my mom in a pretty skirt. There was Jim, even though he wasn't feeling good, in a bright red shirt. The whole atmosphere in the house had changed, and it smelled like turkey dinner. It felt like a family get-together. It was awesome. Anyway, so then around 8:30 at night, it was time to take her home, and I was going to drive her because buses had quit. And as we're leaving, my mother, who's British proper, says, oh, pardon me, I didn't get your last name. And Faye says, Holden. And my eyes perked up. I'm like, I can't believe I heard that. But my mother says, no, that's my last name.
Oh, my goodness.
And I stood there silently waiting for my mom's little light bulbs to go on. And Faith goes, no, that's my last name. And my mother says, how do you spell it? Because there's three different ways to spell it. It was spelled exactly the same way. So,
my goodness.
Yeah, it was a miracle. So they went and they sat down on the couch and they talked. And Faith had been married, and her husband had died, as I mentioned earlier, as Jim was. And that her husband had been one of four siblings, like Jim was. None of those four siblings had any children, just like Jim and his siblings had no children. They found out Faith and my mom had gone to the same school. Oh, and both their husbands were from England. It was like looking through a mirror. It was amazing. And so as I'm driving her home after this miracle, I'm thinking, what were the odds for that phone call? If I had called a millisecond before or after, I would not have gotten her. But for it to divinely awaken somebody who absolutely needed family, who we needed the family feeling also, and to share it, and to have the same last name, it was like family had come together.
It's an incredible story, Mary Ellen, and I know that it's something when we can take time to look at situations like that. And, of course, I think you're a magnet for all of this kind of stuff because you're always expecting it and you're looking for it, and you have so many wonderful stories that you share. But I want you to also share about your kitties because there is a wonderful photograph that you took of me in studio with one of your babies, and they were babies at the time. Your beautiful Persians, and you've got to let us know about what's happening with those Persians at this time. So let's go back to when you first got them, and then tell my audience what you have been able to teach these beautiful Persian kittens.
Well, I should send you that picture so you can post it somewhere if you don't have it already. But, I had cancer, which is a trip to hell and back, and I'd wanted a silver Persian for a long time because I'd had them earlier. And when they died, it was so devastated I could not get another one because I didn't want my heart broken that much. But anyway, after I survived the experience, I found out my husband was looking for a shaded silver Persian in the Eugene area. My girlfriend, Atira, was looking in the Seattle area. My friend, Sid, was looking in the Tacoma area. Everybody wanted to make me happy with a kitten, but nobody found one. And then one day, I just thought, what would I call my website if I had silver Persians? So I just typed in silverpersians.com. This beautiful website came up back in Boston, and the lady has them. They don't have a mushed face. They're absolutely adorable. Anyways, I couldn't afford the $400, and I couldn't afford to fly out, pick it up, and bring it back. But what happened is, 2 days before Christmas, she had a litter of kittens, and one was born to a mother who had lost seven litters, and the brother was born dead. And so when Miss Wings presented Breach, she thought, I'm just going to help this poor mother cat out and pull out this kitten, and she grabbed the tail and pulled it and kind of snapped it off. So the kitten was born with a little puff butt. It's so cute. And but she thought, who would want that kitten? And then all I got for Christmas that year was a T-shirt with a Persian on it said, Dear Santa, all I want is a Persian. Of course, I cried because I didn't have a cat. 2 days later, she called me up because she'd been reading my Angel Scribe newsletters and offered me the kitten for free. And my readers helped me bring it out by one of them telling somebody about it who's a flight attendant, and she flew it from Boston to Oregon. And as time went by, Miss Wings has three kittens, and we have a big pool in our backyard. And we didn't want them to drown because one in a thousand cats drowns. And we gave them all swim lessons. And they're all over the Internet. And Animal Planet heard about us, showed up this summer, and everybody can watch them on Must Love Cats giving kitty paddling lessons to other cats. And it's humorous. It's serious about teaching. It respects the cats. And they said they saw my cats do things like they'd never seen other cats do. And there's a lot of surprises in there just to warm your heart and make you smile.
Well, Mary Ellen, what is the website? Angelscribe.com?
Yes.
Is that the website?
Yeah, Angel and Scribe as in writing, S-C-R-I-B-E.com.
Yes. Angelscribe.com.
Sure, and people can get the free Angels and Miracles newsletters, and they can get the free, I'm a pet columnist, and I send out pet miracles the month of December. And then...
Yes.
Pet tips and tales all year long.
Well, I'll tell you, Mary Ellen, it's always fun having you on the air, and especially this time of the year. You've shared a couple of Christmas miracle stories, both about your own personal family as well as your beautiful Persian kittens, which I just dearly love. They are just absolutely adorable. And I wish you and your family the greatest of holiday seasons. I know you'll have so many wonderful things to share and enjoy. And for those of you that love animals and love inspirational stories, be sure to check out angelscribe.com. You can sign up for her free newsletter. It's just a joy. Not only that, but she's a great photographer. Mary Ellen, thank you again for being my guest. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. And find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open if you'd like to call in and chat with me today. Well, give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, my goodness, before we know it, the Christmas Day celebration is going to be in front of us. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been, whenever I have a little bit of time, I've been managing to get some baking in. And I just absolutely love to do it. If you're like me, you always have to sample as you go along. I think I'm going to have to go out. I sent an email to a friend of mine. I said, are you willing to go with me on a 500-mile run to be able to get rid of all these calories that I'm chopping down? I haven't heard back from her yet, but I'm sure she's going to say, just not interested, not going to go there. I want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to have on Philip Copens, the Ancient Alien Question. Now, this has got a different perspective that I think you're going to enjoy. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about how you can survive your financial crisis with Vivian Gaspar. Friday, because Christmas is on Sunday, I am going to be playing my traditional Christmas show. We're going to be doing that. And I'm going to be getting ready for the holiday because we have just got a huge group of people that are going to be in our home and on Christmas Day. And then also on Monday, we're going to have a best of Donna, so I just wanted to let you know about that. But if you're like me, every once in a while, you're trying to come up with something that's going to be easy to fix. And I don't know about you, but I really love vegetables. So this is a roasted sweet vegetable medley that I think you're going to enjoy. But before we go to that, let's go to our first caller. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, first name Ann. I'm calling from Detroit.
Hi, Anne. Welcome from Detroit. Any snow yet?
No, not yet.
I'm sure you're not anxious to get it too soon.
No. Well, we had a little taste of it, but it went away, and it can stay away a little bit longer.
I've got it. I understand it. I know what that's like. Okay, let's get down to business with you, Anne. First of all, I'm looking at business being stable. So that represents to me a pattern of stability economically, even though you're going to find yourself having to watch how you manage your money because there are some bills that are going to be coming in after the first of the year, and it might be around February or March, and you need to make sure that you've got some cash put aside so that you can manage those bills comfortably and not feel stressed over it. But there is a change that seems to be evolving, and one that I think you've been working towards for quite a while. There's a change coming in by early spring that could possibly open up the door to a new promotion, job opportunity, a shift in a working environment that would mean more dollars in your pocket, which I think would be extremely positive. So whatever you do, don't give up on your aspirations and just realize that this need to be financially prudent is for a period of time, and you can learn more about managing your money in different ways just by taking advantage of the library, listening to talk shows, whatever it is that you want to do, until you figure out the program you want to work with. Now, there's someone that's very close to your heart that apparently is having some health problems, and you are concerned about them, and you feel sort of helpless because you're not in a position to really do very much for them. And I want to tell you that's all right, but do keep in touch with them. Don't feel guilty that you're not able to do more. Be sure you call them or send them cute cards, maybe emails, whatever works. Keep in touch with them because you are inspiring to them, and you give them that sense of what I'd call comfort and solidarity that psychologically and emotionally is very, very good for them. What did you want to ask me today?
Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about one person in particular, if you could share with me your thoughts or feelings on what's going on.
All right. What is the individual's first name or initial?
It's Peter.
Peter, okay. Now, with Peter,
no,
what...
Pierre. Pierre.
Pierre?
Yes.
Okay, we're sort of talking over each other, so I apologize for that. There's a little bit of a time delay. But Pierre, when I'm looking at Pierre, I think Pierre's at a crossroad. I think that what Pierre would be well advised to do is to be quiet for a while. Stop trying to push in so many different options. Industriousness is very good, but sometimes we can undermine ourselves by trying to go into too many different directions without really evaluating what our strengths are and what's most meaningful to us. And I think with Pierre, he feels like he's caught between a rock and a hard spot at this time. And he's not really. It's just a transitional phase that he needs to go through. And if he is not willing to do what's necessary to go through this transitional phase, he may think that he's got to go 10,000 miles an hour. But if he tries to do that, he's going to end up actually going backwards, not forward. So he needs to make it okay to slow down, to evaluate what's in his life, and to really look at what his priorities are. And if he looks at them with clarity, I think he's going to be able to make a shift and a change in his life within, I'd say, 3 weeks. And then things are going to move a lot more quickly for him. It's just a very interesting cycle for Pierre, and I think that he's got to realize that it's his choices that make the difference.
Do you see any closer relationship between us?
I don't see how that really can occur at this time because of what he's going through. Now, Anne, I'm sorry, dear, I'm going to have to say goodbye because we're at the end of the time. And the hour's
okay,
just gone
well,
by.
I appreciate
I'd like to win.
This.
Thank you so much. You have
Thank
a marvelous
you so much.
Holiday. Okay, dear. Bye-bye.
Thank
this
you,
is Donna Sebo. My
Bye-bye.
Goodness, the hour just flew by like the wind. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You
are the captain of your soul. Whatever you do, realize that you are blessed, and those blessings will multiply unto you a thousandfold. Don't be afraid. Don't be concerned. Your life is rich, and it's going to get richer because of how you deal with every moment that you experience. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back here on BBS Radio, same time, same place, right here, where you can listen in from 3 to 4 to The Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.